Hello and welcome to a special presentation from In the Money Media. This is Racing with Roman, Season 2, Episode 10. Peter Thomas Fornatale back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, reaching out to a man, I'm not sure where he is in the world, but I'm suspecting maybe he is in a similar part of the world to me on this beautiful Saturday day in New York City. We welcome him back, the man who sponsors these shows, a gambler, a horse owner, Larry Roman. Larry, what's up, buddy?
Oh, that was a good guess. I am in New York. We'll be going to New Jersey to meet George. We're going to watch simulcast from there.
Nice.
I was there yesterday as well. I did real well yesterday, so I wish we were doing this yesterday. but that's the way racing goes. You have your good days and you have your bad days. All is good. The weather's good here. Big problem we have is I looked at the whole card. There's really nothing great, to be honest with you. But my home track is Aqueduct. That's where I do my best handicapping. That's where I really know the horses. So today we're going to stick with Aqueduct. When we get to the races, we'll do races 6 and 8.
I thought they were both a little bit interesting. I had opinions anyway, and it's always just great to have the grass racing back in New York. I've got one in tomorrow, actually, at the Big A as part of my partnership with my friends at Adelphi Racing Club. We've got Gem Mint 10 in the last race. I haven't fully handicapped the race yet, but at first glance, it looked like we were in with a shot. But I wanted to talk to you about your forays into ownership, especially your recent trip to Keeneland. Didn't get the result you were looking for there, but I'm assuming you managed to have a pretty good time anyway. I want to hear about your experience at Keeneland last weekend.
Well, you know, there is really nothing like Keeneland. And, you know, like I said, magical is the word I use, that dark green, classy. I mean, all the men and all the women are dressed up beyond the Kentucky Derby. And they're all so nice out there to help you. So classy. I had to get my racing license and, you know, the two in construction. So I had to couldn't find the racing office, and it was on the sales office. So it was a challenge. And one of the people said, okay, I'll lead you then and walk with me maybe a half a mile to get to the race office. I mean, in New York, could you imagine that?
Beat it, buddy.
Doing that. And I said, thank you so much. You know, I try to give a tip. They wouldn't take a tip. Walked a half a mile with me. And the room, the owner's room, they have a special room for stakes horses. So it's beautiful. Everything is complimentary. You're on the fourth floor. I mean, it is really a first-class place. And going into the paddock, it's just, you know, you just feel very, very special. I was in the paddock, and Arad Ortiz was walking through, and he knows me, and I know him. And I felt very special. There was like 800 people around, and he saw me, and he came right over to me. And I said, when you get back to New York, start riding some of my horses. He said, I'd love to, even though he never wins for me. But he's the best rider in the history of racing. And, you know, when I say that about somebody who hasn't won for me, it's telling you he's just that good. He's just an amazing, amazing athlete. And in New York, honestly, we have such great jockeys there that are, I mean, and Carmouche has really improved. You watch him now and he's always laughing and having a great time and anything. Anyway, getting back to Keeneland, it was very, very special. With the race, unfortunately, I didn't really get to talk to Gutierrez because I didn't want, I knew the only, you know, in his mind, it was like gun and just go as far as you can. But I know I've been watching racing for decades. You have been. In a race like that, can you go out, open up five lengths, and actually think in a mile in a 3/16 race, you're actually going to last? And, you know, the answer is no, unless you're a super horse. Maybe if he was fierceness, maybe he could have won. But he got to the lead. He opened up a few lengths. And as I said on our broadcast, King's Barn was unbeatable. I knew he was unbeatable. He won. Okay, it was a good prep race for him. He's a very, very, very nice horse. Our horse got tired, expectedly so. I mean, I would have been shocked if based upon the way he rode him, he would be able to last. But, you know, in his mind, he was, that was his best shot to win. Looked good for the first three quarters of the race, but on the turn, I saw he was getting tired, and that was it. So we brought him back home. He came back sound, and we'll look for a spot in at home, which is Aqueduct, Belmont, Saratoga. That's where I do the best. And so we're back home. But I will say again, the experience was absolutely wonderful. And I love the spirit of the people there and the kindness. And it's just, if you haven't been to Keeneland, go there, but you better have seats or something, because the place is absolutely mobbed. I don't know how many people they had there, but my guess would be 40,000. And, you know, it's not like it's a huge track, but a fantastic place to go. You were there, right? You were there the week before.
I was there opening weekend, and I didn't get the beautiful weather like you got, so it was a little bit more manageable. But I will say part of the idea behind this renovation that they're doing is to create a little bit more space for people to be able to get close to the horses, especially in that paddock area. And yeah, if you plan in advance, get some seats, get a space in one of the dining rooms, and that does make it a little bit easier to have a home base. But I've had a lot of fun days floating around that place too. It's really special. I'm glad you got to experience it. We didn't get the result we wanted on the track, but at the same time, I mean, the horse fired. You got to run for your money. Just didn't work out that day, and on to bigger and better things for well, the
not Roman not stable. Bigger and better. More realistic. How's that?
All right, that's fair. That's a good point. I'll accept the host fail on that one. You're right. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than Keeneland. I did have a general racing question I wanted to ask you, Larry, before we get into the specifics of these two races at Aqueduct. You know, you're very known for your acumen in the claiming game. You mentioned George Anthony, who's helped you over the years on the side of making decisions about which horses to claim. Without asking you to give away the store, what is it you're looking for typically when you're looking to claim a horse?
Okay, first, set the record straight. George Anthony doesn't tell me who to claim.
I thought he was one of your advisors. He's had good success in that world.
I have no advisors. I advise. I don't have advisors. I think I'm... wherever I go, the guy that I respect the most... as far as claiming goes, is Atrus.
Sure.
And he just has, and I'm talking now about claiming, you know, what horse to claim. Atrus and Dave Jacobson are equal as trainers, in my mind. They're both phenomenal, incredible trainers. But in looking at horses, he seems to always have a feel for the improvement a horse might have or weaknesses the horse might have. He really gets into those little details. I don't know. He's got a great grapevine because he's such an easy guy to talk to and everybody likes him, you know, except now he's winning a lot. They probably don't like him as much.
But, fair enough.
But he does know. But what I look, let me tell you what I look for. And a perfect example is in race eight today at Aqueduct, one of the ones we're talking about. There you have a horse named Mim. Okay. And you can see right on the lines, claimed by Lawrence P. Roman for $30,000. Of course, the horse was picked out by me. And why did I pick out the horse? Okay, I felt the horse, you know, he was a New York bred horse. He had been racing in maiden special weights. And now they're dropping this. The horse raced at Saratoga. Didn't get disgraced, fourth and fifth, right? Okay. Now all of a sudden, they come back and they want to drop the horse. And they dropped the horse into a 30,000 claimer. So I'm saying 30 claimer. Okay, I don't really love this horse, but I like Practical Joke. I like Distorted Humor on the Damn Side. Let's take a shot with this horse and let's hope that the horse runs and doesn't win. Because the horse looked to me like a 2-to-1 shot in the race. So the odds are he's not going to win. And if he doesn't win, I felt that, you know, maiden 30, maiden 40 is pretty much the same. So he finishes second. Luckily, he got beat a length. And now there's a race, which you do look forward. What kind of race is it coming up? Here's a race on the grass. So there's a race on the grass for 40. Okay. Can he run on the grass? Well, Practical Jokes and Distorted Human, you know, have bloodlines to run on the grass. Yep. I don't know until we put him, you know, try it. But we put him in there. He was in a very weak field. So he wins the race, not because he was good. He won the race because it was a really bad field. And Dub claimed him for 40. Thank you. I wasn't as upset. Thank you very much. I got the horse. We made the 10,000. We got the purse money and we move on. And so a lot of what I look at is, you know, I look at breeding. I look at who's the trainer, but I love to claim horses where I believe they're a conditioned horse and they're not going to win that race, but they're going to be competitive. So if I have a maiden special 40 and I think the horse, if I think the horse is going to win, I don't want to claim the horse.
Right.
Because
you don't want to lose the condition.
They're going to have to go up in class.
Yep.
I want to get a win. And so that's the art of the handicap. And sometimes it works against you. You know, sometimes the horse does win. But over the years, I've been pretty successful at finding horses that finish second or third or fourth in a condition race. And then we bring them back and in that same condition or step them up one level like we did here with Mim. And the horse wins or finishes first or second. Conditions in racing, in thoroughbred racing, are critical because once you get into the open condition, that becomes a lot harder. And, you know, you can go against horses that have won 5 or 6 times in a row, you know, and before you're even racing, you're out of it. So I love condition claimers. I'll buy allowance horses. I mean, I bought horses that are good allowance horses, but I try to keep, if I'm buying a horse, I try to keep it under 150,000. That's really like my maximum because when they hurt themselves, there's nothing you can do. So I'm looking at all those things. I look at trainers. I like the trainers, obviously, that aren't as successful as the top trainers. I look at current form. So to me, a horse that's knocking on the door all the time, gets beat a half a length, comes from behind, you know, not gutted out horse, and a steady, good, consistent horse is something that I look at. We put in a lot of claims where we finish, where the horse wins by 8 lengths and we don't win the shake. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the name of the game.
Very competitive these days with the horse shortage. You're going to have a lot. You see a lot more of those, you know, 12-way shakes or more at a place like Saratoga. People are desperate to get live horses. I'm sure you've seen that change in the game. Maybe you had a better batting average of being able to have successful claims 5-10 years ago than what it is today.
Yeah, and I don't like it. I think there should be. So my first rule would be rule change. Not that these people ever listened to me or the horsemen, but you know, they have this rule, which I think is stupid, 30 days, and then you could put the horse in whatever class you want. So you claim a horse for 40,000, and Linda's a specialist at this, Linda Rice. And I'm not holding it against her. She's playing by the rules. I'm against the rules. So she claims a horse for 40, and then you see the horse in for 25 or for 16. And as a bettor, now you got a horse that's going to go off at 4 to 5, and the question is the horse okay? Why is he giving the horse away? You know, you're playing a guessing game. So my idea is, no, I don't care about the 30 days. You claim a horse, and the first time you race the horse, you have to race the horse at 20% higher claiming price. Whether it's a month, a week, doesn't matter. So that somebody can't be going in there and just saying, hey, I'm going to claim the horse. I'm going to drop the horse. And I want to get a win. And
by the way, a lot better for bettors. Your way would be a lot better for bettors having to play that game. And, you know, bettors don't like long odds on shots. And that's what the current rules do seem to lead to.
Right. And I just want to be honest. I played the game. I had a horse chocolate shake win the other day. I don't know, 2 weeks ago. And I claimed the horse for 25. I didn't like the way he raced. So I talked with Attriss and I said, look, let's drop the horse in. I think we put him in for 14 or 16, one of those condition races. We knew he was training pretty well, but his line looked bad. And I said, we'll put him in, and I think we're going to win the race. pretty sure we're going to win the race. Maybe somebody will be scared off, and we won the race for fun, and people were scared off. And I felt like, well, I played by the rules. I just think the rules don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And horsemen are the ones who should be making the rules as far as those kinds of things. I'm not talking about real rules. I'm talking about claiming rules and what makes sense for the public and the gamblers, the bettors. Remember something. I started out as a bettor. Okay. I love gambling on horses. I just love to bet. And those are the people who pay all our bills. It's not the horse owners. I'm not important to the game as a horse owner, because if I'm not there, there's 100 people who will take my place. But the bettors are the ones we can't afford to lose. And so we need to make rules that make the odds fairer, that when you're seeing a race, I don't want to see a races with horses 3 to 5 and that kind of thing. You can't really make money. So I think we should, you know, get together a panel with the racetrack, with those officials, and say, hey, look, let's make rules that make it where these races, you're not going to have these prohibitive favorites where people scratch their heads and you don't want to bet on them and you don't want to bet against them.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying. That's just, it's just my opinion. I have been known to be very logical. I'm not right all the time, but I am logical. And I think that that's really the focus the game has to get into, other than, you know, some of the things. You know, my new line now is void the void claim rule. Void the void claim rule, because this thing has just been, like, to me, it's just a disaster. It's helped me a lot. It's hurt me, but it's not about me. It just doesn't make any sense to me, the whole rule, because who are you protecting? You're not protecting the horse. Who are you protecting?
Yeah,
a new owner?
In theory, and we should get to these races before too long, so maybe we'll put a pin in this and come back. I think it was designed with an idea that it would help the horse, but I think the trainers have found some workarounds where it doesn't really work to the horse's benefit. We'll definitely – I want to get back to that topic with you next time, Larry, and I definitely want to talk to you about the type of person you think should be looking to get involved in the claiming game or the horse race ownership game. But I'm also worried we're running out of time, and I don't want to give short shrift to these races. So let's I'll make a note to bring those topics back up the next time. And for now, I think we should pivot to the Saturday card at Aqueduct, starting with a really interesting stake race. I know you love your three-year-olds. We've got them on the turf here in the Woodhaven going a mile. And I had a little pedigree angle in this race, but I was curious to talk to you about it first. We should probably start with the morning line favorite, Carson's Run, a grade one winner, making his return to the races off of a six-month absence. Are you with Carson's Run or against him in this Woodhaven Stakes today?
Well, I'm against him. I'm not hugely against him, because obviously he has lines there, and you know, he did win grade one. He's going to be overbet because of that. Dylan Davis has been riding lights out. I mean, he's really riding great. But like you said, the horse has been off for 5 months. I'm not a big Cupid fan as a sire. I'm not a big fan of Henny Hughes on the dam side. That may not matter, because, I mean, his last start, he had the 11 post, you know, in a much, much tougher race than this. You know, wasn't embarrassed there. I think he's going to be even money. Okay, and I've been right all the time about the odds. He's going to be about even money because of that.
Feels
right. And, you know, these turf races, so much of it is just the right horse who gets the right trip, who's coming strong at the end. So although I'm saying, yes, you know, you got to use him a little bit. He could be there, but I'm not betting him as a strong opinion. What I am looking at, and maybe you're looking at the same horse. I'm looking at the 7 horse.
Yep.
Elysian Meadows. Okay. And why? Because he's City of Light, which we know can go on turf. He's out of a Warfront dam, which is all turf. He's never raced on the turf, which I don't understand why. Maybe that was just a time of the year.
That's what apparently I think. He was actually entered. He was entered for a turf race that didn't go before his first race on the dirt. And then I think by the time, you know, Mott was able to get him in, you know, November 18th, the turf season's just about over.
Right. And then you have Lescano, you know, who's unbelievable on the grass. I mean, that's his specialty. So I'm looking at this race and going, hey, you know, it's only a 7-horse field, but it's a very select field. And I'm really looking at that horse as the horse that can upset. 9-2 in the morning line, I think you should get somewhere around that, 4-1, 9-2, because this 2 is going to be that big. So I like him. I also like the 4-horse. You know, this horse has, you know, been off a long time, probably for the same reason. He's got his one race. He closed strongly in his first start. I mean, basically he's done nothing wrong. I like the Hard Spuns that do very well on the grass, as well as Smart Strike on the damp side. So I'm, you know, I don't like him as much as the 7, but I think it's not impossible. I think he's a horse that if he gets the right trip could be very close. And then, of course, we have Wally World.
Great name.
Is it right? That's not Disney World, right? That was a movie. I don't
know. That's from Vacation. The great Vacation is where Wally World is from.
Okay, good. So you look at this horse. He's a consistent horse. Got Manny Franco. Great rider. Absolutely great at what he does. Smart and aggressive. The horse seems to me to like to finish second, although he has a win in his first race, but his last two, he's been decent seconds. I think you might get second with him here. I don't think he's going to win, but I think he's going to be competitive in the race. And the other three have no chance at all. Just cross them off. The 1, the 3, and the 5 just, to me, have absolutely no chance in this race. Say you now?
I think the 7's a really interesting key. I agree with everything you said about Carson's run. A likely winner, but a very unlikely to be value. I don't think Wally World will be any value. And the 2 you mentioned are the most interesting, but none more so than Elysian Meadows. Digging into the female family, that's a strong Coolmore family. And he's even a relative to a Group 1 winner, a horse called Falbrav, who ran in the Breeders' Cup many moons ago. This is a very strong turf pedigree. And I think what happened is they became victims of their own success in a way. When he won on dirt, a little bit of Derby fever, they figure, hey, let's try the Sam Davis, let's try the Wood. And now they're getting back to reality. And the reality is this is going to be a better turf horse. And I think you're right, we're going to get a good price on Elysian Meadows into the teeth of Carson's run and all the rest. So I'm happy to bet Elysian Meadows to win. And I think for exotics purposes, messing around with the 4 and then, you know, the other 2 logicals is just a very smart way to fly. I think we got a good chance to catch something there. And I think it'll pay okay, especially if we can get Carson's run out of the exact. I'm not sure we'll be able to do that. But hey, even second, if we can get Elysian Meadows up, we'll be able to get a little bit of return, I think, in this stakes action at Aqueduct on the day. Shall we pivot to this 8th race?
Yes, let's get there.
So we do have some scratches in this one to tell you about. The 4 will not go. The 12 is out, and the 1A is out. So definitely make a note of those. Your old friend Mim reappearing on the turf, actually, for the first time since you won with her. She's back in a turf race. Looks a big price in here. I think a lot of the market attention is going to focus on the number 1, Overacting, and also the number 8, Roagna. Is it one of those top 2 that you're interested in, or can we pull in something at a price, maybe even your old friend Mim?
Well, no, actually, I'm surprised, because I know how astute you are, that the 11, you didn't realize, drew into the race.
Yes, the 11 is in there, which is certainly going to be one that catches a lot of money as well.
Yeah, I think the 11 is going to be the favorite. I think the 11 is going to be, yeah, here's a horse that's a New York bred horse, and yet he's racing out at Santa Anita and Del Mar and knocking the head there.
Yeah.
I mean, wins by 2.5, wins by 2.5, battles and loses on a photo, a half a length, 3/4 of a length. I mean, this horse is going to get bet. And I don't love this horse. I more so because of the, I don't like the bloodlines that he has. But I also look at lines, and I think he's got great lines. I think this horse is going to be on or right near the lead. And I think he's going to get bet big time. Remember the 1 and 1A, you know, they bet entries. I do like though the one.
Yes.
And I like him a lot. Why? Mendelsohn's been throwing some pretty good things on the turf. I think there was one yesterday, right? First time starter in the first race, I think it was at Keeneland. And it was a Mendelsohn. He was even money because, you know, of his trainer. And he was way back, way back. He looked like the dumbest bet at even money. And he swept the field to 1 for fun. So clearly that's showing these Mendelsohns can run on the turf. He won his first start. He came back and got beat a half a length with a very hard trip. Then he ran again and finished a good second. He's got Manny Franco on the inside. This is a horse that's going to get a lot of money from me. Okay. Mim has no chance. Like I said, the one time, yes, she won on the turf, but I owned her. It was the worst field you could ever imagine. So she's not going to win here. So what I would be doing, and the 8, I'm not a big fan of Air Force Blue, but the 8 did run a great bang up race. So I can't, you know, I got to consider and respect that horse. What I'm going to be doing to make money, I'm boxing 1-8 and 1-11. Boxing 1-8 and 1-11. That's it. And so for your $8, you're going to get back probably 24, and I can't see anything else. And even though it's a full field, and we know in these turf races, horses slip up the rail, I just think these three lay over the field. And if I was betting win, it would have to be, you know, the one who's the better price, because I really can't separate the three. The big difference for me is I like that the one is starting inside. I like his breeding. I love Manny Franco. And I, you know, that's what's giving me the edge over the other two.
Yeah, she's going to get the best trip. She's going to get the best trip, yeah. I think. She might have the speed, looking at pace figures, to lead from the outset. The Brown Barn is absolutely flying. I have minor knocks on the 8 and the 11. So my minor knock on the 8, Roagna, has to do with the trainer, who I think is a great trainer, Jimmy Bond. But this is a trainer who very often points much more to Saratoga. And he'll win at Aqueduct, but he doesn't usually win. And it's a small sample, only 15 runners in the last 5 years. But his long layoff runners at Aqueduct, 0 for 15 over the last 5 years, I just worry she's going to be coming back a little bit short. I still think she's good enough to run second, but I think the good overacting is going to beat her. And then my fear with First Time in Forever, the 11 runner, is just the trip she's going to get. I think she'll try to show speed for sure, but looking at pace figures, I'm not sure she's not going to end up getting hung a little bit wide, and especially if they're aggressive with overacting. I could see her in sort of a chasing, not-so-fun position around that first turn and maybe not being able to recover from that. Again, good enough to probably just stick on and get second, but I don't think they're beating overacting here, so we're similar in that regard. The one that I'd throw in at maybe a little bit of a price, along with those other two for underneath, is the 9-runner Stella Mars. This is just it's an interesting barn change from Napal Chatterall to Mike Maker. Maker not going great right now, not going great at Aqueduct, but this is a horse like I felt might be able to step up and get a second or third, and just want to maybe mix into the number with the logicals here. But like you, I'm mainly all about overacting in this spot.
Yeah, no, I do understand what you're talking about, the trainer change and stuff. I just don't think the horse is good enough to run with the 1-8 and 11. I don't think so. But, you know, we've all seen it where a horse gets claimed and it looks like a totally different horse than, you know, what's showing on the lines. So I'm not going to say it's impossible, because you know I love to say that, but I'm not going to say it's impossible. But I'd be very, I'll put it this way, I'd be very, very surprised. So I'll just say box 1-8, box 111, and just stand at the window. And after the race, when it's official, take your money and be very happy. And with that, I'm going to be happy because I'm leaving to watch the races.
Love it.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, my friend. I was going to use the old expression, do not miss this opportunity to be handed free money. Larry, great talking with you. We'll be back soon for another show.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.